Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Magical Musings. Join us for the next hour. Brian and Joy are going to be talking about everything that the books don't talk about and furthering your education. So come on in. We're going to have a good time. Tonight's episode is going to be on Beltania, one of the big fire festivals of the pagan Wheel of the Year. I'm Joy. I'm one of your hosts. Brian's on the other end of the phone, as always.
Right here.
He is always there. And tonight promises to be kind of a really interesting one, because we're talking about one of the major fire festivals in pagandom, if you will. This is going to be episode 16, I think, and it's going to be one of the holiday ones. So, you know, if you want to listen to the other episodes, there's going to be a lot of tie-in with those as well. And there you go. So
exactly.
Yeah. So really, the first thing that we got to look at is the fact that this is we're recording this a little bit before the 1st of May. We're going to be broadcasting it on the 1st of May. So today is from sunset to sunset, from sunset on April the 30th to sunset April 1st. Or May 1st, I should say, is Beltania. And this is one of the major fire festivals of the pagan Wheel of the Year, like we said. It's also the biggest fertility festival of the year. We've been talking bit about the fertility festival of Astara and some of the fertility festival on Imbolc in the past two celebrations. This is the big one. This is the one that's kind of the equivalent of Samhain. With Samhain, you've got two harvest festivals just previous to that, and then the major harvest festival is on October the 31st. Well, this is on the other side of the year, the fertility festivals. And if you even have a casual acquaintance with pagan symbolism and pagan festivals, or even pagan religions or anything, you're going to see pagan symbolism all over May Day celebrations without even trying. The huge one that everybody sees is May Day, the Maypole, and everybody dancing around it and decorating it. Well, I don't know how much more phallic you can possibly get. You're literally...
Well, to quote the girls' class in the original Wicker Man movie, the phallic symbol. Because that entire movie was built around May Day.
And yeah.
So,
I mean, you
it
have
was
a...
filmed in a November winter in, like, Scotland. But nonetheless, it technically was celebrating the May Festival.
I mean, when you look at it, here you have... What, six people, six males, six females, they're going in opposite directions around the maypole. They're weaving in and out of each other, with the maypole itself representing the 13th person, and you are literally decorating a giant dick. You know,
that brings to mind the images, those old woodcuts of, what the hell was his name?
Robin Goodfellow?
He's like a devil figure standing in a field, and all these people are like dancing around him.
It's Robin Greenfellow or Goodfellow, one of the two.
That's it. Yes.
Yep.
That totally does make sense now, actually.
Uh-huh, because that's what it is. That's what the woodcut is of. It's a Beltania celebration, even though they misattribute it all the time to a witch's Sabbath. But, I mean, it's the Beltania celebration. You know, it's Beltania is one of those festivals that when you start looking at it, you kind of have to start going, why the hell was I so blind before? I mean, because here you have the bunnies and eggs still from the Ostara celebration. You still have the new fertility coming in, the fertility of the fields. You have the fire festivals where the fires are put out and rekindled again, third time of the year, with that new symbolism. You have the purification rites of driving the cattle between the fires, the bone fires, to bless and purify them. The blessing to make sure that they have more kids, which is another fertility thing. You have the dancing around the maypole. You have the dancing with the brooms, where instead of having it like a hobby horse where the bristles are down and you're, you know, riding it around like you would ride a broom if you were in the sky, you actually have the bristles up in your face, so you're showing the plants how to grow, and you're jumping in the fields, and you're showing them how high to get. And then you have, you know, the rites of spring, where you're actually having sex out in the fields, so that the sexual energy and the fertility of that energy goes into the fields to bless them, to make them grow. You know, and this is all about the fertility of the people, the herds, the fields, essentially the earth. Because, I mean, this is the time when things are starting to grow. They're starting to get together. The early wheat is already in the ground, and there it's starting to grow. But now you've got the late season stuff that can grow very fast, like maize. The maize starts growing, and it grows fairly rapidly now. I'm not going to call it corn, because corn is literally any plant that has kernels on it. So wheat is corn, barley is corn.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, maize is corn. So it's go ahead.
Like it's one of those terms that, like, on this side of the pond, you get, you know, people using it to talk about the yellow kernels of a food crop that was, you know, genetically enhanced from, you know, a grain. But actually, like in the UK, the term corn refers to any grain.
Mm-hmm. And that's why you have an older books like, I don't know, Ivanhoe and the Black Arrow and things like that. You have them talking about barley corn. It's not that this is a special type of corn that is half barley and half maize. It's that this is literally that was what it was called. It was called barley corn. And oat
True.
Corn and other things like that. But you also have not only the screwing in the fields, but you have the symbolic screwing with the symbolic great rite in Wicca. You have this is a transition time from the female or the male leading the tribes and taking care of the people and providing to transitioning over to the lady taking care of the people and her leading the tribes now because during the summer of plenty. And when you think about it in terms of a hunter-gatherer society, summertime is when you camp in one place, when you grow the food, when you seek in the fields for the wild grains and for this, that, and the other. And this is the gathering time and the harvesting time and the growing time and taking care of that. During the winter, while the herds are migrating, you're following along with them. You're killing the herd animals. You're taking the meat. You're preserving them. So in a hunter-gatherer time, you know, the wintertime is the time of the hunting and the finding the meat, and the summertime is the time of the gathering the crops and the foods and the corns and the grains. That's why during the autumn time you have this feast with both with lots and lots and lots of grains, lots and lots and lots of vegetables, and some meat. And in the springtime you have, you know, some meat and some, you know, that and just a little bit of the plants, because the plants haven't grown yet and they haven't gathered them yet. So you can really see how the celebration of Thanksgiving, at least in the United States, came about. They had lots of plants that they had been gathering all year, and they went out and hunted down some of the animals, and this was the winter preparatory feast at the time. But back to Beltania. Let's see.
This is the festival that, you know, it has, like, numerous nicknames, and it's celebrated by various groups under those, you know, various names as well. I mean, even in the Church of Satan, May Eve is one of the two major holidays, in at least in the Levian tradition, whereas you get, like, sort of Germanic-based traditional witchcraft that talks about it being Walpurgisnacht. And, you know, this is the night of the great Sabbat that all the witches travel across Europe on their brooms or, you know, on their demon with familiars their demon or whatever. to like travel to this one sacred mountain in Germany. And you guys can look it up. I can't think of it offhand, unfortunately. But it's like this sacred mountain that's for centuries has been traditionally held as the main meeting place for witches across Europe.
Oh God, you struck Mary's research chord. She's now typing.
I have like a book somewhere that it shows like little woodcuts and talks about that specific place, and I can't think of which book it is. I want to say.
She's throwing up her hands in frustration. The research goddess has failed. The internet has failed her. Okay.
try entering it as Walpurgisnacht. WALPURGISNACHT. And it will probably bring up something related to that.
Yeah, that's not the problem.
I mean, aside from the Church of Satan.
Yeah, she has no internet right now. Computer is dying.
That's a bigger problem.
Yes.
That's going to be a problem. Actually, you know what? I think I see the cover of the book that I'm thinking of. So you riff for a few minutes, and I'll go grab it.
No, I can't talk on a subject I know nothing about for hours. Gosh, what are you talking about?
Not at all. We've never done that before.
Never, ever, ever. No, what he's talking about is one of the things he mentioned was that it's one of the two big festivals in Levian Satanism. And the other one I'm going to bet is probably Samhain. Okay, these are the only two actually celebrations that are mentioned in Bullfinch's mythology, because you can find him that there are references to druids in Bullfinch's, and Bullfinch's has just Beltania and Samhain as the celebrations that the druids have. Now, this is ignoring the other ones of Lusnada and Imbolc and the Cross Quarters, but he probably wasn't around for those. These were the really big, exciting ones. Let's see. If I recall correctly, this is also one of the attributed times when the mistletoe would be harvested after a winter, the sixth moon. Would probably happen right around now, and there was another tradition of slaughtering the sacred white bull and skinning it for its hide. There was divination done, like on every fire festival and every cross quarter celebration. There was more than that. It was a time when they could check, you know, the omens and check how things are supposed to be getting better throughout the year, so that they could, you know, be aware of what's going on. Because remember, they're living, you know, right in nature. I mean, in Western society, we're kind of pulled back from it. We know about the weather. We hear about the weather. We see weather reports on the TV. We're affected of the weather when we go to work. But we're not living right in the teeth of the weather. We're not dependent upon the rain for our fields. We're not dependent upon the sun to, you know, just enough sun and just enough rain. And even though, you know, because we can do things like pull in water from lakes and fertilize like that, we don't have to worry about just the rain falling, you know. But still, it's something that, you know, we do need. We still need to have the sun. We still need to have the rain. Because if the rain doesn't fill up the lakes, then we can't use that to irrigate. So we're kind of divorced a bit from nature. Simply by, you know, living in Western society now. Unless you live on a farm in a very rural area. Then you're still right there in the middle of everything. And I hear that Brian's back. He's probably flipping madly through his book going...
Well, I was trying to, but I know it's in one of my books. I've got like at least three or four that come to mind when I think about this particular thing. And unfortunately, Call of the Horned Piper, while fascinating, is not the one that I was thinking of. But there is a bunch of research on the interweb, our amazing, wonderful thing that it is, that talks about the traditional May Eve celebration in Northern Europe. I'm just glancing through it right now to see if I can find the mention of the particular mountain that is associated with this particular celebration in Germany. Okay.
Well, while he's looking, a couple of other things. As Brian said earlier, it is known by a multitude of different names. Beltane is only one of them, and that's fairly a new name more than anything else. May Eve or May Day are probably the most common worldwide, or some variant of it. 'Cause I don't know about you, but when I was little, I was hearing about May Day celebrations all the time. So you have a lot of interest in the May Day celebrations. And I know that there's some items. Wait a second. I know that there are some traditions around May Day that go back centuries. One of which is, you know, the going out and hunting for eggs and hunting for baby rabbits, but that's, you know, more Ostara than May Day. The traditions that are associated with May Day specifically are, you know, flowers. And as mentioned back in the Ostara show, you know, what you're basically giving is you're giving the reproductive organs of plants to your beloved. So I don't know how more obvious you can be with it. Because here you are, you have reproductive organs, you are shoving them at someone that you care for, and that's a pretty blatant let's go fuck, in my opinion. Because, you know, you just can't get away from that one.
I suppose not.
I mean, a lot of people don't recognize that anymore. They don't realize that, you know, flowers, they're pretty. You look at them. They're nice. They're wonderful. They're cute. You know, they don't realize, hey, this is the pistil and stamen. This is how plants reproduce. This is, you know, they're sexual organs. You've just broken the sexual organs off of a plant, and you're handing them to someone else. And, you know.
How very weirdly associated with, like, Osiris and Isis.
Huh. That's an interesting correlation. I had never thought of that. For those of you who don't know...
Well, because, like... Go for it.
Well, for those of you that don't know, the myth of Osiris and Isis is Isis fell in love with Osiris. Set wasn't happy that she had fallen in love with him. He killed him, buried him in... cut him into pieces. He wound up being in a tree at one point. That was how he was buried in a sarcophagus. Isis went around and found all the pieces of Osiris except for his penis. She finally found his penis, this wooden phallic thing, and she used it to screw herself to get pregnant, even though he was dead, while she was trying to bring him back to life. It's a really complex... myth.
It's an interesting story, I will say that much.
And it's one of the ones that Joseph Campbell talks about.
Undoubtedly, because that is, it's like a foundational myth in any sort of pagan tradition, any sort of discussion of mythology. Because Isis and Osiris, I mean, Osiris is one of the primary deities in ancient Egypt of, like, resurrection and of fertility, and, you know, he's this dude that sort of rules over all sorts of things that are important, life death. And death, you know, and yeah, so I mean, traditionally he's chopped into 14 pieces, she finds 13 of them except for his dick, and then makes one out of gold
and she gets pregnant. She gets pregnant off of the dildo that's not even attached to him, you know, while he's still dead, and she's taking care of a pharaoh's child and burning it up in a fire so that she can make it immortal.
Yes, there's nothing weird or twisted necrophiliac about it at all.
Well, the thing I found interesting is that she's being the babysitter of this Pharaoh's child. She has the Pharaoh's child in the fire to burn out the mortality of the Pharaoh's child so that the Pharaoh's child can live forever, okay? Meanwhile, she's has a spell going on trying to reassemble Osiris back into a whole human being so that she can be with him. But she turns into a bird and is flying around the room. Okay, why did she turn into a bird? I mean, that's the part that I just, it doesn't connect somehow. That's just this big blue piece in this puzzle full of red pieces. It's like, what?
But that does sort of relate to her wings, right? Like, that's the whole origin of her little wing thing.
Well, the whole thing of
every
wing
dancer
thing.
Who does an Isis thing has the wings.
Yeah, and but she was the deity of magic, essentially. And, you know, the dead and eternal life and a lot of other things. I mean, she was the daughter of the earth and the sky, you know.
Newton Gebb, if you guys are unfamiliar.
Anyway, yeah, everything relates to Beltania.
Everything relates to Beltane. And somehow it relates to Tarot, too.
Yes. The Emperor and Empress to Beltania. Yeah, he's pronouncing it Beltane, and I'm pronouncing it Beltania. This is simply a stylistic thing. It's spelled Beltane. Or Beltain. There's a number of different...
Well, there's a few different spellings, and each one has its own spell, like pronunciation, and then you get like different groups that have their pronunciations and so on. So It's basically Mayday. You know, I could call it Walpurgisnacht, and it would still be the same thing. You know,
now, this is not the anime Walpurgisnacht out of... never mind. Sorry.
No, this is the raucous, hilarious festival. I found a few little tidbits of information about it. The place that I was thinking of is called Bloxburg, Bloxberg, or Brocken. Brocken. It's outside of a town in Germany called Harz, Harz, or Z, if you are Canadian. Apparently every year at May Day, they have a big witch celebration, and they wear, like, hilarious costumes and have bonfires and if you're going to go to Germany, hit it on May Day, you will have a lot of fun.
And this celebration actually is tame compared to the old Roman celebrations, where they had strips of goat leather tied to a stick that they would whip guys' genitalia till they bled with.
Kinky.
Yeah. Here we are back to BDSM and paganism, but, you know.
Well, I wonder if it isn't just part of the whole, like, fertility movement, because blood is life and, you know, sex
exactly.
is life and,
mm-hmm.
oh, it's all kinds of crazy and blended together.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, is anything dealing with the genitalia, anything dealing with blood, probably has something to do with fertility, simply due to the fact that in ancient societies, sex wasn't seen as bad. It's only when you come into the Victorian times where you start getting into very repressive sexuality. You have it, you know, cropping up in various places before then, but it really went bad during that time period and just before, because I don't know what was wrong with Queen Victoria. I know her husband died, and she was a widower for the rest of her reign, but she was one of the biggest prudes ever. But a lot of the current
the
problems...
The weird thing is, though, with Victoria, when she was younger, before she got married, she was quite lusty and, mm-hmm. and full of vigor in life, and she was, like, taking lovers, and, you know, she was, like, hooking up with random nobles and
I think
you know,
you're thinking of Elizabeth.
She was just having fun.
I think you're thinking of
no,
the
I'm
first
pretty
Elizabeth.
Sure it's Victoria.
Mary saying no. She was apparently very circumscribed.
Well, because I think what happened, like there was a show, I don't know if it's just a Canadian show or not, but they talked about the history of various people, and they talked about Victoria in one entire episode, and Yeah, the image people have of her in that long black matronly dress with a white veil and all that kind of stuff was later in life after she'd... There was something that had happened, like something had
affected
her health. Philip
died. She married Prince Albert, and he died, and she was very soon into her reign, and she was a widow from that point on. But she fell in love with a groundskeeper, and that's alleged that she took him as a lover. But she was very prudish throughout her entire reign. So.
Fair enough. Is Prince Albert the one who lends his name to that piercing?
And to the tobacco cans, yes.
Really?
Really.
Prince Albert is a tobacco brand? I never knew that. I always
yes,
heard.
In America, it's a tobacco brand. Because the joke is, call a tobacco shop and say, do you have Prince Albert in a can? And when they say yes, you say, well, let him out, and then hang up. You know?
I can't believe it's actually a tobacco brand. Never understood that joke before now.
It's a pipe tobacco.
Oh, see, classy.
Yeah.
I would probably be into it.
Yes, Prince Albert in a can
anyway.
Is a real thing. It all leads back to Tarot because, anyway. No, but yeah, with the... From what I can piece together and what UPG has shown to me, which, by the way, in case you don't know and you've never listened to another episode that we've had, is unverified personal gnosis, which is understandings that come to you with no basis in proof, no way of pointing to any evidence to prove it, but it works for you. What this shows me is that these types of traditions have been going on for multiple eons. If you think back to some of the scenes that you see from things like King Arthur and his stepsister in what's the book? Miss of Avalon.
That'd be the one. Yes.
Yeah. Where he's having sex with her, and she's being the priestess, and he's being the king of the herds. That's another fertility rite, a transition time from one to another. You know, and things like that, if you kind of start looking into the anthropological stuff, actually did happen. Wasn't necessarily a sister and brother that did it, but they didn't really care about incest. They were more concerned with the acts and the sacred acts and the representations that those sacred acts had. What they were showing in, what Marion Zimmer Bradley was showing in the book was this is a rite of kingship. She, Morgan Le Fay, is standing in as the sovereignty of England, or the island of the mighty, whatever you want to call it. And he is the king that is coming in to take control and rule over the island. But he is also submitting himself to the higher authority of the goddess of the land. So he is using his kingly body, his studly self, and fertilizing the land with himself. He is binding himself to the realm, essentially, symbolically, and in fact, you know, literally, through his holy self. Okay.
Well, and that ties to the whole concept of Grail alchemy and so on too, because what you're dealing with is. Okay, in stories about this dude called the Fisher King, you've got this king who's like in his youth he's all virile and wonderful and he's really like a loved king who's bringing prosperity to the land, and then he gets a wound in his dong. They say in his thigh, but you know most people understand that to mean you know he got his
penis shot
off, or you know, whatever.
Say it, penis shot off.
I guess it probably was shot off. I don't remember. But basically, the idea with his whole story is that, you know, in order to regain his health, he has to drink from the Grail. And in the concept of Grail alchemy, the Grail represents the sort of the land, but it also represents kind of sexual union. And the only way the king can reclaim his health is by, you know, making a porno movie kind of deal. And regaining his vigor by uniting with the land. So the big question in that whole story cycle is, whom does the Grail serve? And it serves the land. It's like tied to the land. It is the fertility of everything.
Mm-hmm. And that's the point of all of that. It's not that you want to bind the king to the land. It's that the land is supporting the king, and the king is supporting the land. And their lives are tied together, because what is good for the king is good for the land. But in the same token, he cannot then abuse the land, because if he does, he's hurting himself. And that's something that a lot of people tend to forget. They see the benefits of, yes, the land is going to support him, and it's going to keep him young, and it's going to take care of him and keep him well. But it's also, you know, constraining his actions so much, because at that point, he can't take actions that are going to be detrimental to the land. Like, he can't go out and clear cut a forest because he wants to build a wooden fort, because that's going to be detrimental to the land, and the land's not going to let him do it. It's going to literally hurt him to do that. So he has to find some other way to get the goals that he wants, or he has to convince the land itself that this is for its benefit. So it really, you know, it's a geas of the highest order, where he can't take actions that are going to hurt the overall area that he is connected to, because he will literally be hurting himself.
It's very true.
And a lot of people tend to forget that point. You know, I know that there's many, many, many people out there who are, you know, oh, being, you know, king of an area is great. Well, you got to understand something. In all the stories and all the mythologies, and there's multiple examples of this out there in Irish mythology, in Welsh mythology, in British mythology, on back. I mean, just off the top of my head, some examples. Lew Samaldanich, after his cycle with the rest of the gods, he had a scene where he is living in a hut, and Cú Chulainn comes and meets with him for a little while and talks to him. He's living with Sovereignty at that point, Sovereignty of Ireland. There is Lu Lá Gifis and Garán Mhuir Pedir, and their cycle back and forth throughout the time. There is Bran the Blessed and his connection to the land. There's King Arthur and Guinevere and Morgan Le Fay, as an example. There is Rhiannon and Pryderi, or Rhiannon and Pwyll. And after that, Manawydan and her son Pryderi as part of it, because a lot of people have summarized that the goddess Rhiannon is the goddess of sovereignty of the land. So you've got more than a few examples of this, and I lost what I was trying to say. But it's the point of it is that it is a cooperation between the two opposing forces, the force that wants progress, the force that wants to change, the force that wants to industrialize everything, and the force that is the land, is the area that they're living in, where they have to be a steward of it and take care of it so that there is more for next year. Okay? It is that dichotomy that brings about all that is good in life. And when you forget one side or the other, you start getting really bad consequences. I mean, just look at nature now. We've forgotten that we're stewards of the land, and we've got global warming, we've got pollution everywhere, we've got people dying, we've got three-eyed fish being born. But at the same time, if we forget that there does have to be progress, that we do have to use the resources that are available, you get, you know, jungles that are impenetrable with diseases coming out of them that, you know, will wipe out hundreds of thousands of people, like, oh, I don't know, malaria, for example, or Ebola, for another, that just, you know, AIDS, that kills people for no particular reason other than to get rid of them. You have wildfires, where there's so much there that it just wipes it all out. And yeah, for the most part, it seems like nature by itself without any progress or any control on it is a good thing, but that's only because we haven't really seen nature out of control, because we've been living with nature in control all the time. It's not until
nature's
we
on the other side of the fence, so
right.
It doesn't seem to us that, you know, we are subjected to its whims.
Mm-hmm. It's because the nature cycle is such a long one that we can't see beyond just a couple of generations down the line to see what long-term consequences are in the natural cycle. All we can see is our cycle. The only way we would be able to see it is to pull ourselves out of it completely and watch over several hundred centuries what happens. Then we would be able to see it. Then we would be able to go, okay, here's where this is messing up. This is where things are going bad. This is what we need to do. Because this is bad and it needs some control in there. And it needs something to regulate it instead of just going crazy. Okay. Now, personally, as a priestess of Wicca and a pagan, I see that there has to be a balance between them. I do not think that we need to get rid of all humanity. There is some good things that came out of human occupation. I mean, not only because I'm a member of the human race, but, you know, I like living too. You know, and I like not having diseases and things like that. So there are some good things. The problem is that we are not limiting ourselves. You and I on an individual level can limit ourselves, but we're not forcing others to limit themselves. Like corporations, who see the earth as something that to be exploited from the beginning to the end, and that, you know, just because we're using it all up doesn't mean that it's not going to be there next year. And we're not forcing them to understand that, you know, well, you're using it all up and it's not going to be here. Okay. So it's my opinion that while there are good things to come out of humanity, there right now there are a lot of people who are ignoring consequences because they're greedy, and that's what we have to work towards stopping. That doesn't mean we stop at all, because I don't know about you, but cattle running wild in the street, I really don't want to look like India, because that's what PETA wants us to become. Well, I mean, that's what PETA wants us to become. They want us to all stop eating meat and to go out and free all the cattle. Okay, well, that's great, but there's 500 million cattle out there in the United States alone, and if we freed them all, literally we would wind up looking like the markets in Delhi, where you have cattle that are emaciated and starving, trying to eat something, and we're driving them off. They're not scared of people, so they're attacking people. You know, this is not a good thing. Anyway, end of speech. Sorry.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting time of year as well, because I mean in the sort of traditional sense, this is one of those nights of like enormous power. This is like the big night for casting a whole slew of spells, etc. We've talked in a couple of past episodes about spellcrafting and energy use, and May Eve, Beltane, well, Purgis Noct, whatever you want to call it, is one of those two times of the year that is supposed to be like the supreme high charge magical night of the year.
Yeah, I mean, if one
the
of
other,
the,
of course, being Samhain.
Yeah. And if you're going to have one on one side of the year, you're going to have one on the other side of the year as well. Sorry.
Exactly. That's okay. But yeah, I mean, like, so this, I mean, this is a huge time of year, you know, with all the lore that you can find online and in books. If you're inclined to celebrate Beltane as an individual or with a group or with your family or whatever, I mean, there are ways to make it a very meaningful and special celebration.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, the maypole, which has, you know, pan-European traditions, probably even into, like, the Russian territories and that sort of thing. I mean, it's a very, very common symbol, and different regions of the world have different manifestations of what the maypole looks like. But ultimately, it's all the same thing. You know, it's a celebration of fertility and the height of libido and hormones. And, you know, it's, I don't know, if I was inclined to sort of tack a point in someone's life to the day, I would probably say this is kind of like the late teen era where they're, you know, they're, their libido is just like raging, and in a lot of past cultures, it wasn't really seen as a big deal. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of hang-ups about sex. So, you know, you might have a bunch of young people getting it on in the fields, or, you know, just outside the fires, etc. I mean,
when it was allowed,
it's a time for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and
having touched upon it not only obliquely but very blatantly here, let's talk a little bit about the attitudes towards sex, especially during this time, and magical sex. Because, I mean, we've talked about how sex is seen as a fertility rite, and, I mean, that's essentially all it is. You are taking the sperm from the male, you're putting that sperm into the female, it's mating up with the egg, it's having a baby. I mean, you can't get any more blatant in fertility than that. But when you start talking about the act of sex in a pagan mindset, there's a number of hang-ups that come over from other religious traditions that have to be broken through before you can actually start just going, okay, it's sex. And a lot of these, I think, comes from not only the Victorian time period, but also some of the emphasis put on sex by other faith paths. And I'm not going to name any names here. I'm going to try real hard not to, but
all know what we're thinking about.
Yes, I hope so. Or else you really need to go back and re-listen to a few of the other ones. But anyway, when you start talking about sex and the prohibitions against sex by some of the other religions, what you're really talking about is you're talking about control. You are speaking literally in the religion trying to make the adherents control themselves. Okay. Why? This is, I think, because a lot of the other faiths see themselves as a very, very intellectual, very spiritual, very top level path. And sexuality and having sex is a very base animalistic instinct. And if we can dig out those animalistic instincts and get rid of them, then we'll become perfect and like God and everything will be great. Okay? Except that's not humanity. Humanity is not about digging out those base impulses. Humanity is about being what you are. Okay. Now, yes, you try to act the best you can to the people around you. You try to do what's right for them and for you, and you try not to hurt anybody else. But when you start saying that you can't have sex because it's a base instinct, it may look like a base instinct, but you know what? It's impregnated into every cell of our body, into every DNA chain. There is no escaping it. So sex is not something that is terrible, but it's used as a mechanism of control. It's used as a mechanism of guilt. It's used as a mechanism of, well, you're still having these base animalistic instincts, therefore you're not perfect, therefore you have to work again, and you're a bad person, yada, yada, yada. Okay. Unfortunately, this goes to a real extreme, and I think that everybody needs to just step back from their religions and go, okay, I understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to get us to act in a manner that is more consistent with higher purposes than with baser purposes. But there's still times that I'm going to want to get drunk. There's still times that I'm going to want to fuck everything. There's still times that I'm going to go out and kill something. And those are okay. One of the best insights I ever saw or ever read or ever heard of in any of my studies was there was a it was out of a story of Shambhala, and there was this acolyte who was talking with one of the elder masters in this Buddhist colony in Shambhala, and some of the younger brothers, some of the younger monks, went out on this one night and just went crazy. They got drunk. They screwed everything in sight. They went down to the village, and it was a big high party and everything like this. And the acolyte was really confused, and he was like, "Master, what the heck is going on? I mean, these are brothers. Why are they out there? They're drinking. They're having sex. They're dancing. I mean, what the hell?" And the master's like, "Ah, moderation in all things, my son, including moderation." That comes from exactly. Lost Horizon. And, and it's, it's one of those things.
See, I was just thinking about that book, too. I was like, that sounds really familiar.
But that's the thing. It's, you have to have times when you can go crazy. You have to have times when you can be all those things that you're repressing. Or else, I guarantee you, if you don't, you're going to explode. The repressed things are going to just go nuts. What the heck? Did you just drop the
call? I don't know what the hell happened there.
Okay. It sounded like we lost you and then got you back. Hmm. Well,
we did.
Still, yeah.
The call dropped out. I don't know what the hell happened.
Why? Technology hates us.
Are you just going to piece the two pieces together then?
Yeah, I will. But,
okay.
Then
we'll just pretend that...
It never happened? Mm-hmm. This was not
yes.
real.
Never.
Lost Horizon by James Hilton is where that comes from. Mary just informed me. But, it's true. You got to have that time period, because anybody can tell you, somebody that represses anger and represses anger and represses anger and represses anger and represses anger eventually is going to either have an ulcer and die, or they're going to snap completely and just lose it all over everybody. And either extreme is not a good one.
Well, exactly. I mean, I can't remember if it's outside of or part of Hermann Hesse's Siddhartha, where Prince Gautama sort of sits back and he remembers this period in his childhood where he and his father are sitting on the riverbank, and he happens to hear this musician and his apprentice sailing down the river in a boat, and they say, if the string's too tight, it will break. If the string's too loose, it won't play.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it just right and it'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the whole concept of moderation is trans-traditional, really. I mean, when you talk about, the mystical traditions in any of the major religions, Kabbalah, Gnosticism, Tantra, tantric Buddhism, alchemy, And then, of course, you know, into the neo-pagan sexual mysticism and so on. I mean, what you get is this concept that sex is a gateway to understanding the divine. Because denying the body is just not healthy. And what you find too in all of those mystical traditions is that the early stages where you're supposed to get used to the dogma and the lore and that sort of thing, this is kind of prep work, moving you into readiness for the advanced stages.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere along the way, the big main religions forgot that. So they shut it out, they deny it, they pretend it doesn't exist. But in modern Kabbalah, with, you know, even under the strictest Jewish tradition of it, it's a very sexual thing. The main books for study in the Kabbalah are called the Zohar, and it's this like story of a rabbi who's traveling, and you know, it discusses the verses in the book of Genesis in very illicit, like sexual, graphic terms.
Mm-hmm.
And it really picks apart all of what people understand the Bible to be, because that's not how it's seen in the more advanced tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you get the rules about, you know, having to be married and having to be a certain age and all this kind of stuff, because they don't want you to just play with it willy-nilly.
Actually, you can play with it willy-nilly.
Well, yes. I mean, it's true, because ultimately all of the mysticism and knowledge, and actually I think that's why certain people that I've known over the years have sort of walked away from their religious upbringing to explore Tantra and, you know, that sort of thing, because rather than go through all the traditional rules and the hang-ups and all that kind of crap, they wanted to get right to the heart of it and, mm-hmm. and discover the, you know, I don't know, for lack of a better term, the golden flower and that sort of thing.
And the point of all of this, that the reason that I brought it up is simply that there's a huge hang-up about sex, at least in Western societies, that it's something bad and something dirty and something base and animalistic that needs to be hidden. And that's just not true. It is a part of human nature. It is part of who we are. It is part of our genetic makeup. And it's something that can't be escaped from. So instead of repressing it, let's celebrate it. And that's what Beltanya is about, is celebrating that part of us. And it's taking that Absolutely. And going crazy with it. And there were times back in the 1100s and right around that time when the Christian church had a lot of control in the area. And they would go, okay, well, it's Beltanya. Go out, have fun, have sex with whomever. You know, if it's not your spouse of record, we understand that. You know, but, you know, try to have sex with your love if you can. And, you know, just have fun and, you know, be yourself.
It's true. The rules were relaxed.
They were.
Actually, like, that's sort of depicted in Myths of Avalon, and I've seen it elsewhere, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of hinted at in Robin of Sherwood as well, during one of the episodes, where, you know, there's, like, this festival, and Robin Hood is kind of the head of the party, and Marion mm-hmm. is his consort kind of deal. And yeah, I mean, that it's a very common thing to see.
You know,
Mayday being
go ahead.
Hmm. No, well, Mayday is kind of that day to relax and celebrate sex. So
mm-hmm. And it's not a bad thing. I mean, if you can't look, I'm gonna be real crude here. If you don't have a partner, masturbation is fine. Pleasuring yourself is one of the things that you can do. There's nothing wrong with it. Everybody thinks that it's abuse and that you're going to go blind, grow hair on the palms of your hands, that you're slaughtering billions and billions of people by letting your seed spill on the ground, and it's just not so. Okay? This is something that generates a lot of energy. I mean, it generates a fuck ton of energy, if that were a measurement. It really generates lots and lots of magical energy. And on a very... All right, we're going to go back to the spellcrafting for just a little bit. We were talking about where the energy comes from. It comes from the universe. It's created by all living things, surrounds us, binds us, all that good stuff. Okay, here's where it comes together. The energy of the universe is creative energy. Okay, the energy that all of this comes from the energy of life, the energy of creation. What is a greater creative act than to have sex? Because you are literally creating a new human life at that point. There's two parts of it. There's the physiological. The penis goes into the vagina, ejaculates sperm, goes in, and gets to the egg. It implants. It becomes a zygote, turns into a baby, and it's born. Okay? That's the mechanical part. There is a spiritual part to this, too. The energy that the male generates while having sex with the female. And at the moment of orgasm, the energy as well as the sperm goes into the lady. The lady has her egg. It's in there. She's orgasming as well. So her energy has been built up and released at the same time. Those two energetic forces comes together and hits, as well as the sperm and the egg hitting together and creates a human being. It is a creative act of creation, as on the level of deity, okay? And that's why, if you ever watch, the female, at the end of having a mind-blowing sex session, is wide awake, bouncing around, wanting to paint the ceiling, and the man is like, oh my God, I'm so tired. Okay? Because she has received all of this energy from him, and it is still in her. He, on the other hand, has just essentially run a marathon, and he is passing out tired. This is why, okay?
True.
Now, if you remove the energetic part from it, okay, and you only have the physical part, yes, the baby still will be created, okay? However, it will probably have problems.
It's just not as interesting.
It's not as interesting, no. I'm kind of leaning towards there's possibly going to be problems with it, sickly, other birth defects, I don't know. I do know that you can have sex without the physical component and still have the energetic component together. Two people masturbating in the same bed, mutually jacking each other off, they're actually not penetrative sex. Okay, you still have the same energetic sex, you still have that combination of things, and you can take all of that energy, all of that creative energy, and force it into a spell at the moment of orgasm. And this is called sex magic, and it's one of the most common types of magic that's out there. Okay, the priests and priestesses and the elders in the craft aren't going to talk about this very much, because it's not something that... It's something that we try to downplay for everybody who's not pagan, you know, but it's one of the basic ways of casting a spell is to the male and the female both go into a sex act, both understanding that this energy is going to go towards this need and this spell, and while we're having sex, we're going to be concentrating and focusing on this spell, and then we're going to orgasm, and all that energy is going to go into that spell, and it's going to go out into the universe. And cause the spell to come to life.
And
okay.
I mean, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, they talk about in the advanced levels of Tantra and so on as well. I mean, like, even in Taoism, I mean, it's all over the place. And it's all the same concept of raising energy, directing the energy, and in Gnosticism they call it transmutation. It's the same term in alchemy. And basically the idea is to will the energy that you raise to become in like alchemy, I mean, the idea is to form your soul so that you can become an angelic being. Whereas in like Tantra, it's kind of the same thing. Different books will talk about it using different terms, but essentially the whole idea is the same thing. You're raising energy, you're focusing the energy, and then you release it to a purpose. And I mean, if you were to go to like Amazon or something right now and enter sex magic, dozens of books would come up of varying popularities and qualities and so on.
Including a number about kink magic and sex, because it's the same impetus.
Very
it's
true.
Just a different way of raising the same energy. Go ahead.
Absolutely. And I mean, I can't remember which of his books it was in, but Aleister Crowley talked about 8 different ways of raising magic, or raising energy, sorry. And, you know, sex is obviously among them, but, you know, I think actually Buckland talks about it in his Big Blue One, too.
He does.
Because he talks about, like, restriction of oxygen, you know, blood and all this kind of stuff. And, I mean, these are all different ways for you to enhance the raising of energy. I actually managed to find a few that talk about solo sex in you know, obviously because it was more relevant to me. I looked up, you know, solo sex magic for men, and a few books came up. So if it's something that you want to get into, Beltane is definitely a time of year when you probably want to start playing around with it, because hell, it's your body. Enjoy it. Mm-hmm. If you happen to have magical inclinations, put those in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you happen to have a blow up toy, then incorporate that if you don't have a partner, you know, like, there are different ways that you
Well, we're
can
not going to go into
that.
The whole in a lot all of the let's not go into all the well, mechanics no. here, cuz then we get into pornography and then we'd have Clearly. To classify this as not safe for work.
Well, I'm not sure that most people who play our podcasts are listening to them out loud at work with all the swearing we do.
Well, let's hope not. No, but seriously.
And it's on you people if you do. Seriously. We do not want to take any blame for you losing your job because you listened to loud swearing and sexual talk.
There you go.
Work.
Yes. But yeah, the main thing is that I have a very, I don't know, there's a lot of fiction that I've read. Callahan's, there's also Stranger in a Strange Land, and a lot of other writers who have this attitude of, as long as it's not hurting anybody, including yourself, then what you do in the privacy of your bedroom that's enjoyable is completely up to you. If it's two cats, you and a member of the opposite sex, you and a member of the same sex, you a member of the opposite sex and a member of the same sex, and a cat, and I don't know, you know, it just doesn't matter. As long as it is as long as it is enjoyable to you and nobody's getting harmed in that, everyone understands what's going on. There is a component of enjoyment amongst everybody there, and nobody's getting jealous or physically injured or emotionally injured, then whatever happens, happens, and it's fine. It's you got to purge out of your brain and out of your psyche this attitude that sex is bad. Unfortunately, Western society makes it really, really hard to do that, because nowhere in the universe is sex so interesting and so forbidden than in Western society. Okay?
It's
you know, because you see a nipple.
Well, because, I mean...
I mean, there was...
Oh, yes. Terribly graphic. Oh, my God.
It was like there was Heidi Klum was at the beach, and not too long ago, and there was a huge article about how she was at the beach and she saved two people from drowning. And the article wasn't about her saving her child and her nanny for her child from drowning. It was how her swimsuit slipped and showed her nipple while she was saving them from drowning. And it's like,
but isn't
what?
That the way of Hollywood and the tabloid media, though? I
it's
mean,
like, what kind of
Janet
a society
Jackson
are we in where, you know, it's more, it's terrible, it's more of a story that her nipple was showing than she rescued two people from death. You know?
It's true. Because, I mean, you remember the whole Janet Jackson and...
oh, God, Justin Timberlake.
Justin, that's the one.
Yep.
Like... her nipple slipped out of her costume, and suddenly that was the big news. You know, it was
that
like
wasn't
everyone
an accident.
Showed that.
That wasn't an accident. That was intentional.
Well,
that was planned.
So be it.
You know, because she had this nice nipple piercing and cover on there, and the only way that she, believe me, those things are not comfortable to wear underneath clothing and bras and things like that. The only reason that she would have that on is that she was going to be displaying it. Okay.
Fair enough. But yeah, I mean, like, it's just a weird attitude we have. Because, I mean, you get into naturist philosophy, and it's all about, you know, the body is just there, you know. It's not sexual unless you're enjoying it sexually, you know. Like, don't get all uptight about it. There was a book I recently read can't remember its name now. Oh, crap. It's Sexual Practices of the Druids, I think it was called.
Mm-hmm.
By John Hughes, I want to say. And he talks about quite thoroughly and graphically the processes of and the necessity of getting over your hang-ups. And, you know, like he talks about the practice of group sex magic and what amounts to partner swapping and orgies and, you know, on and on and on. He's very graphic in it. It's a fascinating book. That, I don't know, personally, I recommend because it really is a fascinating subject. And, I mean, there's like ritual elements to it. But he talks about things like polyamory, etc., that I think are valuable subjects to bring up in that period. And, I mean, I don't know. Personally, I think if you happen to be pagan parents as well, Beltane is probably a really good time to sort of age appropriately, introduce your you know, offspring to
the differences
sexuality
between men and women. And yeah, the sexuality,
exactly.
And the birds and the bees talk and the whole thing. Except do me a favor, please, for all that you love and all that is holy, don't put it in euphemisms. Children don't understand euphemisms. They understand penises and vaginas. They don't understand bees and flowers.
Well, exactly. And I mean, it's really nonsensical to like feel the need to sort of dumb it down or make it like nursery rhyme clean. Mm-hmm. 'Cause honestly, reproduction isn't pretty. You know, it's a graphic process, but you know, obviously it depends on your child. Not every child is going to be like receptive to that. But depending on the age of your kid, they're not stupid. So don't, like, treat them like they are, especially when it comes to their bodies.
And let's be frank. A lot of recently, there's a lot more media attention on sex. I mean, let's take a look at the simple things with the ads and photoshopping women's bodies and body image. Okay, that's a minor example. Then you go into one of the big hits for HBO, The Game of Thrones, and you have graphic sex acts happening right there on screen. if you demystify it for your children and go, okay, that's a man and woman having sex as a couple of dogs would have sex, and that's called doggy style, and they're trying to have a baby, you know, it goes, oh, okay, well, what's for dinner? You know, and your kid just accepts it and goes on. But if you, you know, exactly. Ooh, you know, you can't show, you can't see that, you know, grab their eyes and turn it off and turn it and switch the channel, they're going to be going, what the hell was that? I'm interested now. I want to see that. Let's turn it back on, and now I'm going to sneak and, ooh, that's something dirty and nasty and mean. And then they're getting information.
Well, that's the funny thing.
Go ahead.
Well, because, I mean, I'm reminded of my own boyhood, right, where, like, I had access to porno movies and magazines and all that kind of stuff just easy to hand. And I don't know, the fact that I had other information available as well didn't make me like a rabid horn dog. It kind of made me aware of things. And, mm-hmm. you know, I experimented and so on. I mean, different kids are going to start doing that at different ages, but making it shameful for them to do that is just twisted and an outdated concept.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause, you know, and in my childhood too, I mean, I remember the locker room conversation that I had with two other 11-year-old boys who didn't know any more than I did, of sex was putting the hot dog in the sandbox. And I was like, okay. And had no earthly idea what the hell they were talking about. I mean, I really didn't have a clue.
Because that was the word of mouth thing. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's the, you know, the, oh, if I had a whole jug of Spanish fly, I'd light that corner up over there. And those of you who are into Bill Cosby know where that came from. But, that's the thing. It becomes, do you want accurate information? Do you want to demystify it? Do you want your kids not having sex? Then expose them to it and show them and tell them, you know, this is a normal part of life. This is procreation. This is how you have children. This is a sacred thing that you can do with somebody that you care for, or it can be a casual thing if you don't really care about it, or it can just be bodily relief. I mean, my own daughter. Okay, Mary and I have been very open with her about sex since she was very little, about seven years old on. We have not failed to answer her questions. We have maybe delayed certain questions for later, given her easy answers now and more detailed answers later. But she grew up in an environment where domestic nudity was normal. So she's seen all of us without clothes on. We'll go around the house without clothes on for days if we're not going any place and nobody's coming over. Because let's face it, if you put clothes on just to walk around the house, that's another set of clothes you got to clean. You know, you don't wear clothes, you're fine.
True. Besides, that's what four walls are for, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly, and curtains and things like that. But the point is that she's been exposed to it for her entire life. When she finally came out to us as gay, we were both like, okay, and? You know, and she didn't have a problem doing it. It wasn't traumatic for her. She's accepted my transgenderism as, okay, can I still call you dad? And I was like, okay. And she was like, cool. And she says, you know, dad's upstairs doing this, and she's going to be down here in a little while. And she never bobbles it. It's dad is my title, and she and her are the pronouns. And it's great. You know, now I can, as far as I know, she's never had penetrative sex with a man, but has she had sex with a girlfriend? Of course. Have I caught her at it? No. Would I care? No. As long as they're being careful and they're not getting pregnant, you know, and that's fine. That's
well, exactly.
Part of life. You know, you de-emphasize it. You say that it's normal and you just, okay, you're breathing and, you know, it takes all the wind out of the sails and all the argument just disappears. And it's incredible.
Well, I think that's the same. I think that's the same with any of the supposedly taboo subjects. I mean, if you make drugs a mystery and, you know, like a frightful taboo, then kids are going to be more curious about them. Mm-hmm. If you make alcohol a real frightful taboo, you know, oh, this is only appropriate when you're, you know, legal drinking age or whatever, then they're going to be curious about it. I mean, I grew up in a house where, you know, family gatherings, the kids would go up, you know, to the to the various bars and manifestations of like. And we would mix our own little cocktails and stuff just because we were curious. And it wasn't seen as a big deal. As a result, I think, ended up not being a drinker for the most part. I mean, I've had like gin and tonics and stuff occasionally, but I'm not really a drinker because I just haven't developed a taste for it. You know, I'm not big on drugs because I never really got like caught up in thinking that was a big deal, you know, etc. I mean, if you have the attitude that curiosity about things is normal instead of shameful and terrible, then you've removed one of the major obstacles or one of the major encouragements to begin exploring. And ultimately, I mean, I have to admit, I began exploring rather young with sex, just because the opportunity arose. You know, it wasn't weird or, you know, anything like that, but it's not something I would have shared with my parents, obviously.
Yeah.
But I've never really had hang-ups about it because it's just like, hey, whatever, you know, it's fun, you know, and why shouldn't someone else be involved? Obviously, you know, think of safety, think of pregnancy, because you don't want your little kids to be having little kids of their own, because that's just twisted and wrong.
True.
Go ahead.
Let's face it. I mean, if you're in a pagan situation and you're raising your children as pagan, they're going to encounter sex in basic rituals. I mean, the symbolic great rite is about as sexual as you can possibly get without actually doing the act. You take a dagger, you stick it in a cup, and you do this multiple times. Da Vinci Code, the basic symbols are the knife and the cauldron, and you put them together as the sex act. He's right, because it is. It's the very basic, it's the basis of life is sex, okay? So you've got them being exposed to it anyway, so just demystify it for them. Go ahead.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it's funny too, because one of the most prevalent symbols in the world, next to the swastika probably, is the so-called
which is the
Star
sun wheel.
Of David.
Which is the sun wheel. Just want everybody to understand that. It is
It's a sign of good luck and good fortune and all this kind of stuff. It has positive associations up until, you know,
The Nazis
threw their hats into the ring with that symbol and fucked it all up. But, like, you see the so-called Star of David all over the place. In Tantra, in Judaism, obviously, in Gnosticism, in ceremonial magic, in, you know, neo-pagan traditions, etc. And it means the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's the chalice and the blade combined to create.
And when you look at the something. Elemental symbols, the triangles, pointed up, pointed down, same thing. The pointed down is the chalice. It is a container. It's something to hold something. You have it pointed up. That is something rising. That is a phallic symbol. And you combine the two, you now have a Star of David.
Actually, that's true, because the two elements with the upward triangles are the supposedly male elements, the flame and air. And then the other two, water and earth, are considered feminine.
Right,
so,
and they're ones that,
that's,
you,
that's true.
That rest on. And rest down.
That's very true. Yeah. Interesting.
Which is probably why those were selected, you know?
That wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I don't know. I mean, personally, just out of curiosity and fascination with different symbols and different traditions and how they blended together, you know, I've encountered all of these kind of crazy things in my various researches and so on. And I don't know. I think with the concept of Beltane and, you know, the celebration of sexuality that attends that celebration. It's a good time if you've got some spare time, I guess, you know, within the week prior to it. Spend time thinking about your attitudes about sex and your body and, you know, like various things related to that. Like, examine where they've come from. Like, are they sort of things that you inherited from your parents or from a past religious upbringing or whatever? Have you ever tried to change them? Have you ever read a book that discussed things that you've considered taboo that the book might have made seem not so bad? Like, I know that Stranger in a Strange Land, incidentally, a fantastic novel everyone should read.
Mm-hmm. If you can get the uncut one, if you can get the uncut version, read it, because it really explains some of the things that the original kind of glosses over. Sorry, go ahead.
Wouldn't surprise me. But yeah, I mean, like, it's a great book about the concept of polyamory, multiple partners, you know, group love kind of thing. Another one that comes to mind is Spiritual Polyamory by Mystic Life. It's a really thin book. It seems to have Buddhist leanings, but it's a really cool book about the philosophy of non-monogamy. You know, there are podcasts that deal with it. There's podcasts that deal with all kinds of aspects of sexuality. So, you know, because of the time of year we're in, take some time for yourself to get, you know, curious about sex, because it's not something that you just were curious about as a child and it ends when you, you know, hit adulthood and start having sex. It's something that travels with you your entire life. Sexuality and sexual expression changes over the course of your life. So if you've had a certain way of experiencing sex, or certain attitudes about it, start examining those. You know, start taking a look at what you've held traditionally as your view of sex, mm-hmm. and start questioning it. You know, explore different ways of having sex that you might not have thought of before.
We're not talking about going out and going, you know, whole hog and jumping into sex with multiple partners and stuff. We're talking about challenge your own sexual mores. You have ingrained you have an ingrained way of doing things. Missionary position in the dark with your beloved, you on top or on the bottom, doesn't matter. And, you know, you do that, you both orgasm, you roll over, you go to sleep. Okay? Try it in the light sometime. Try it without any covers over you, where you're in full view of each other.
Do something with satin sheets. You know,
examine each other's body.
Full body.
You know,
exactly. You know, get all your senses involved. Sex is about your body. Your body has five senses that allow it to experience the world. Get more of them involved. You know, mm-hmm. put some really amazing incense out. You know, use scented massage oil or candlelight or specific music that maybe you find particularly erotic. Personally, I tend to like, you know, the kind of stuff that you would have performed by tribal fusion belly dancers.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, belly dance itself is a beautiful art. And I don't know, it has this kind of feel to it. If you've never owned a set of satin sheets, buy a set. You know, get creative, get exploratory with your sexual practices.
I've had two sexual experiences that were very similar to each other with very different partners that I am proudest of, because in each case I made my partner orgasm without ever touching them in any erogenous zone. All I did was trace my hands over their torsos from the waist up, never touched their nipples, didn't allow them to do anything to me. They had to lay there passively with their eyes closed. And all I did was just stroke them all over their torso and arms and hands. And after about 45 minutes or so, she orgasmed hard and said it was one of the most ecstatic experiences she ever had in her life. And never went below the waist.
Well, that goes right back to the... See, that... I think that's the thing, too. Like, people get so hung up on the idea that sex is only between the sexual organs. I mean, your whole body is a sexual organ. It's a sensory tool. Get it involved in different ways. You know, use feathers if you're into that. Use wax. Use oils. Use, you know, whips.
If that's what you're into.
Exactly. I mean, don't be afraid to experiment. If you've got something on your mind that you've kind of been thinking of for a while that, you know, you're kind of hesitant to bring up with your partner,
bring it up. Maybe they've been hesitant to bring it up with you. You know, that's what this time period is for, is to not only expand your rights of spring and the fertility of the fields and stuff, but to expand your own sexual explorations. And, you know, everybody's like, all the sex help books for older married couples that I see are like, explore your boundaries, you know, expand things. Greet them at the door in a gown made of saran wrap. You know, and that sounds cheesy as hell, but if he's a visual person and interested in your body, that's one thing to get him excited. It's not actually do that, because I tell you, being wrapped up in saran wrap is hot and miserable and you sweat like crazy, but it's something to express an interest and to bring something else into it, a visual component, a surprise element. You know, but if they're not expecting something and you just step up like that, it looks like you just lost your mind. But if you both are already in the mood of, okay, we're going to have sex tonight and we're going to, you know, do something different. And tonight you bring out the candles and the incense and the heated oil and you give each other a full body massage. That's exploring your sexual limits. It's not that you are doing something just out of the blue. It's that you're doing something somewhat different that you're both agreeing to, and you're trying something new. Now, you can still have the actual penetrative act as missionary position in the dark with underneath the covers. You know, but at least before that, in the foreplay, you were actually touching each other and reveling in each other's skin and smells and the view of each other in the candlelight. You know? And that's all part of it anyway. The biggest sex organ you have in your body is behind your eyeballs. That's the one you want to get involved, you know. So, yes.
And, yeah, I mean, if it'll titillate you to do it, read erotic stories, you know. Watch a movie if that's something you're into. Try different ways to expand your boundaries. If, you know, you and your partner can be blatantly honest about it and you guys are both in agreement on the concept of perhaps bringing in a third person to the bed or whatever, then maybe start discussing who you kind of think would be fun to play with, you know, like, let yourself open up.
You know, Mary and I have known that we were polyamorous from the beginning when we got together 22 years ago. We have been looking actively for the last 22 years for another person to come in and share our beds with us and to be a co-spouse. And we haven't found anybody that really meshed. The people that we thought would mesh really well admitted that they would be too jealous and that it wouldn't work out. And we had some problems with some other people, you know, and we've tried it several different times. And we've wound up, you know, just she and I, and our sex life has changed. But it's something that, you know, we're not discounting. We kind of have an idea of what we'd like in somebody like that, but we're not pushing it either, and it's not splitting us up. And we are both understanding that, okay, we have to be very careful about this, because it has to be somebody that can not only accept our odd sex life, but our odd religious life, our odd mental life, our odd sexual expression life, you know, and they have to be able to accept all of us, and we have to be able to accept all of them. Because if there's any jealousy, if there's any withholding, if there's any lying, if there's any deception, things are going to fall apart really flipping fast. And this would be the worst thing in the world to do. So we're not going to force it on anybody, but we're not going to, you know, discount it if somebody really fits in either. So, you know, if that's something that turns you on, or, you know, you think you might like it, that's great. If you want to have other partners, you know, outside of the marriage, be a swinger. That's fine, too. You know, sit down with your beloved, talk to them about it, go through all the scenarios that you're going to be working with, and understand that because you want it, that the person that you're thinking of having sex with, that's not your beloved, and your beloved may not want it, that you may have to, okay, love has been defined as where somebody else's happiness is integral to your own happiness, okay? If that's the case, and something that you are doing is going to hurt them, and damage that because that's not going to make them happy, then you may have to just forego it. If you can't forego it, then at least have the balls to say, okay, well, I really need to do this. You don't want me to, so let's break it off. You know, don't try to be the person that goes around behind them. Because one of the first things that we do is, and it harm none. Well, lying to somebody harms them. So have the courage to actually come out and say it. And it may be that you have to leave them. It may be that they have to leave you. It may be that you can both work it out. But wouldn't it be better to know?
You have to take a break for a while. But like, only honesty in the relationship is going to make that known between you.
And that's, you know, this is – Beltania is a celebration of the self. The body, the fertility of what's around you. Okay, now fertility is not just fields, it's not just animals. It's fertility of opportunity and the fertility of situations. It's so, you know, new chances can come in to your life. It's new beginnings. This is literally a new year also. I mean, we've talked about how the new year is usually seen as being on Samhain. Well, this is another transition from one type of the year to the next. So this is a new year also. Okay? The Celts tended to have a lunar, a nocturnal cycle, which means that it started at sunset and lasted until the next sunset, which means that the beginning of their day was at night, and then the dawn came, and that was halfway through their day. And then they had all the sun and everything. Now, it's theorized that the reason this happened is because they came from a desert society where the sun was a bad thing. And if you were out when the sun was up, you were probably going to die. So you did all your moving and you did all your first day stuff at night when the sun was down and it was cool. So that's why that's theorized. And that's a lot of why it's on a nocturnal cycle. Well, if you look at the wheel of the year, it's on a nocturnal cycle too. The first of the new year is going into the dark time of the year. and you have 6 months of darkness and relying on the herds and relying on the animals in the wild, and then you have the half year come around, and you're in the sunny time. Well, this is the beginning of the sun time. Okay, this is the beginning of the mother's time. This is the beginning of the growth time. So yeah, it's a time of new things also. So exploring new sexual ideas, sharing new identities, hell, putting on, you know, your wife's outfit and her putting on your tuxedo, you know, for a costume ball. Do it. You know, you may enjoy it. It's something, it's time to try something new, not just sexually, but new things in your life as well, new opportunities. I know
well,
that...
And that brings...
Go ahead.
Sorry, it brings to mind the whole concept with, like, mumming and that sort of thing. Like, there were traditional mumming poems, or mumming plays that, you know, there would be, like, a main character who was, like, a cross-dresser, or there would be, like, a fool character, or there'd be like the green man or whatever. And I mean, these are all symbolic of the sacred fool, the what's the word they used? There was one really great novel that used the term. But the idea of a contrary, you know, like something that challenges the mainstream. So, you know, if you happen to be a guy who is more inclined to wearing jeans all the time, you know, this time of year might be, you know, kilt time, or, you know, if you want to go all out. Well, exactly. I mean, it might be a time to sort of challenge yourself with your wardrobe. If you're used to wearing a particular style, then pick up an outfit that is totally different from what you would normally wear, you know. Strangely enough, I've been thinking of cutting my hair and getting myself a hat. You know, I've never ever worn a hat in my life. It's not even something I've been inclined to do. I happen to like having long hair as well, but the simple truth is, you know, I get these inclinations once in a while where I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna just chop it. And I'm still debating whether I want to do that right now, but, you know.
Hey, go for it.
I'm tempted because I did it, like, for New Year's in 2008, actually. I buzzed my head from, like, having beyond shoulder-length locks. And, you know, I was like, oh, God, why did I do this? And then I was like, you know, I like this. but, yeah, you know, like, don't be afraid to try something new. Get a new hairstyle. If you're not someone to, you know, try drastic new changes, do simple things. You know, wear your hair differently. I don't know.
You know, I'm looking
color
at
coat.
You know, I normally wear t-shirts and jeans to work. You know, different types of tops and stuff, but they're not really blouses. I'm looking at getting, you know, more dresses and starting to dress more dressily at work, hose and heels and things like that. And as I am, I'm noticing that I'm getting a lot more opportunities for stuff. For instance, I just recently got a promotion, and it's looking to that I'm going to get promoted again because we're growing that fast, and I just happen to be in the right place, looking the right way, doing the right things to fit into those promotions. So, you know, that might help as well. It's a time of new opportunities. It's a time of changing various aspects of your life and growing more yourself. You know, I mean, we talked a lot about sex, and sex is really tied up with Beltania as a whole. So, you know, it's not that out there, but Beltania is so much more than that. It is a transition time. So transition yourself, transition your, lifestyle. If you're thinking about moving, you know, this might be a good opportunity to do so. Things that you've been considering for a while and that the gods have been pushing you into and batting you over the head with, saying you need to change this about yourself, now would be the good time to change that. because it is a new time. It's a new year. It's a new cycle. And the mother's watching out for all of us, you know. There's nothing wrong with going ahead and changing that anyway. So, you know, that's what this holiday is about. It's a major transition time, not only in the cycle of the year, but in ourselves as well.
And heck, you know what? If you happen to be inclined, get yourself a new besom, you know. Make it witchy this year, you know. Get a new besom. Ride it for a ceremony.
Those of you who don't know, a besom is another name for a broom. And we're not talking about one of the Swiffer brooms. We're talking about one of the old bristle brooms with the wooden handle and the sticks for the bristles and broom comb, okay?
Although I suppose in a pinch an upright vacuum will do.
This is not practical magic, thank you.
It could be. And besides, what's a little hocus pocus?
In case y'all didn't get that, in both Practical Magic and the movie Hocus Pocus, one of the witches uses a vacuum cleaner rather than a broom because that's all they had.
Exactly. again, you guys, if you don't catch the references, do watch the movies we talk about because they are fun.
Yes, they are.
And honestly, it's been like, I don't know, 20 odd years since Hocus Pocus came out.
Yeah.
And it's still one that I watch every Halloween, I swear. You know,
well, it's fun.
It is. Exactly. And, you know, like, the character who played Binks was my age when the movie came out. So, you know. But, yeah, I mean, basically, Beltane is time to change, you know. Experience new things. Don't be afraid of them.
Any of the celebrations that are based on a transition time, it's a wonderful time to explore new and a wonderful time to explore change. Not only that, it's a wonderful time to do divinations about change and what would if I type of transitions and divinations and scryings and things like that. Do try to learn a new skill. I mean, right now I'm studying Japanese. You know, it's something that I wanted to do for a long time. And I finally got the Pimsleur Japanese books, and Mary and I are trying to learn Japanese. So it's kind of interesting.
It is fun.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's something that you can do because this is the time for it. There was a lunar eclipse not too long ago. That's another transition point. Because if you think about it, a lunar eclipse is an entire cycle of moons in about an hour. You go from full to, you know, crescent to dark to crescent on the other side to full again in the period of about 3 hours. So you can have an entire moon cycle right there. That's another one. The changing of the seasons, at the cross quarters, the changing times at the fire festivals. You know, any of those types of things are good times to be looking at changes in your life, to do magics about change, to help force change in your life. You know, there's rituals for the family that you can do at those times as well, especially family-oriented ones. Ostara would be an absolutely fantastic time to do family magics to bring your family together or to make you closer knit, or activities with your family to help you all grow closer and more associative. Because I don't know about you, but with computers and with iPads and with phones and TVs and internet and everything else, family, the nuclear family that's supposed to be the tightest knit unit there is breaking apart. And it's becoming nuclear person who has a family who has an extended family, and it's just the person. So use these time periods to get together with your loved ones and bring them together. Have dinners at the table where you, you know, forbid all electronic devices and things like that, you know. And, you know, bring your loved ones closer during this time. You know, that's what this holiday is supposed to be for. It's not just the community. It's the community and the people in the community.
Well, exactly. And, I mean, the whole center of pagan life is the hearth, you know. It's the home. And from there, everything else emerges. So, you know, let it be a time of transition, change, you know, but start with changes at home, you know, your sex life, the way your family lives, you know, the way you interact. Make Beltane, you know, your day or, you know, a weekend or whatever, where you just put away the electronics for, you know, that period and interact together, play board games or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I know some of the funnest times I had with my family here recently. We had some friends come over and we played Settlers of Catan. And we just went crazy with it. And it was wonderful. We don't have a copy of the game, unfortunately, and you can't really play it with three people. But it was a great time, and we had interactions and talked and laughed and joked with each other. And I found out Rhiannon's got a really dry sense of humor. And I love it. I would be surprised if she didn't, because we have really dry senses of humor.
Yes, she picked it up on the street somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
What? What do you mean by that?
Oh, goodness.
Oh, yeah, that bubbly personality she has just has to have picked it up somewhere.
Not from me, I tell you what. But yeah, that's the whole point of this time period. It's not just sex, it's not just fertility, it's also your family. It's getting together, it's trying things new, it's trying new parts of yourself, and expanding your boundaries. Okay, so try all of that this year, and I guess next week we'll be talking about something else. I don't know. But, yeah,
exactly.
This one is going to be up on the 1st. I know that we missed last week's episode.
We're terrible people.
Well, yeah. The fact of the matter is, and I'm going to lay
life
this...
Life has a way of introducing itself.
There is that. But even more than that, like I said, I've got a new job, and the schedule is a little bit up in the air. If I want to keep this job and keep advancing in it, it's pretty much come down that I'm going to adjust to the schedule. The schedule's not going to adjust to me. So
pretty much.
Things are going
to
be...
That's the way it is in any employer.
Yeah, so things are going to be a little up in the air. We're going to record these whenever we can. I'm going to try to make sure that we keep them going up every other Thursday. If we can't, however, just keep checking back. They will get up eventually. And I'm going to be real blunt here. If y'all want us to be really consistent about this, and you want us to have them up when you want them up, encourage us to do so. Donations are willingly accepted. And that's, you know, money talks and BS walks.
well,
you know,
exactly. And feedback is always useful too. I mean, don't be afraid to email us with suggestions about, you know, ways we can improve the show.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just bitch at us about how it sucks or whatever. Offer constructive criticism so that we can discuss it and maybe decide to change things. You know, if you've got topic suggestions, we would love to hear them, because
absolutely,
there's things that we may not even consider bringing up because they're just so much a part of, you know, our own experience that it's like, well, why would we say that? Because
mm-hmm.
we might just assume that everyone else has already had that sort of thing.
Yeah, on that same idea, to date, from all of Tarot Talk and all of Magical Musings, we've had exactly 3 people get in touch with us. Okay? There was one person that got in touch with Brian while we were doing Tarot Talk. There were 2 people that got in touch with me since then. And that's it. if those are the only listeners we've got out there, I feel really bad because I thought we had a little bit more to offer. So, you know, we want to know that you're out there.
It does help. I mean, it's a morale builder, if nothing else. I mean, we'll at least understand there are people listening to us because, I don't know, people who talk don't really like to talk into thin air. I don't know. It's just a weird thing. But, yeah, I mean, interact with us. We aren't going to bite you or attack you.
You know, and I do like
generally come across
this
as pretty...
I like doing this. I like talking to people. I love teaching. I love educating. If I could do teaching full-time forever, I think I would. If I could do it on this topic, it would be my perfect job. But
well, that's true. Like, if it was possible for... Like, if Joy and I didn't live across the continent from each other, we'd probably offer workshops or something so that you guys could interact with us in person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I don't know, I like interacting with people in a direct sort of workshop format.
Oh yeah.
A lot of what I've worked in the past, you know, it's been, you know, small groups or class settings or one-on-one instruction or whatever. I mean, it's fun stuff to do.
It is. It's really good, you know, and You get the instant feedback from the people right there. You have questions that you can answer. And, you know, it really changes the dynamic up a lot because it's not just us talking to each other and preaching to the choir. It's actually having an interaction and doing more of a riff with you guys saying, putting your input into it. You know?
Exactly.
So, yes, we like this. Yes, we are trying to guilt you into coming to our site and talking to us and trying to guilt you into also financially supporting us. Because if you like shows like this or, you know, want to have something that you can say, give us a donation and we'll talk about it. Sound like PBS
well,
now.
Exactly. And if you happen to be like an Etsy store owner or some sort of merchant of some sort, or you offer a service of some kind. We do have ad space available on the website, and our prices, I think, are pretty reasonable. So
it's $10 for a week. I mean, a banner ad, you know, that takes up an area on the left and right, first thing you see when you come onto the site, you know, for $10. What can you lose? You know, if it drives some, we get about 1,000 hits a week on the website. Now, I don't know if those are full page loads. I don't know if the people are actually listening to the episodes, because we get an average of about 50 listens to each episode before the next episode is up. But, you know, 1,000 people a day coming to the website, one or two of them are going to want to be interested in your products, or they should be. You know, so try it out. You know, might give you some additional income, you know.
And heck, you know, if you happen to be a broom maker, I might be interested in buying something you make. Because I'm not sure why, but I just think it's fascinating to own a Besom. Mm. I don't own one right now. I've considered making one. But if you happen to sell them, and I really am fascinated by what you offer, I might be inclined to buy one from you.
You know, so hey.
But you'd have to email us first so that I know.
Speaking of email, joy@magicalmusings.net and brian@magicalmusings.net. We can also be contacted
okay.
through Tumblr wide-worlds-joy.tumblr.com and cosmic-rebirth@tumblr.com. Feel free to friend us. Feel free to look for us on Facebook. Twitter, I've got a Twitter account as well. They're linked not only off of magicalmusings.net, but also off of aaronsjournal.com. Brian's got his Facebook account, and his, three Tumblrs now, I think, or just two.
Well, if you want to get specific, I run like a half dozen blogs on Tumblr.
Ah.
They cover various aspects of my persona, but nonetheless, Yeah, my main one is pretty much the core of my life, on Tumblr, that is. So if you want to get to know me better, Cosmic Rebirth's where you want to go.
Yeah.
Because that's where all the crazy happens, and the side blogs are pretty much to cater to
specific subsets.
People I've known in the past, whatever.
Yeah. And that's pretty much what I do with Wide World's Joy. Yeah. Wide World's Joy is me. That's where I go and bitch and complain and be a person rather than a priestess.
Exactly. Exactly.
Anyway, that's it for this cycle. And I have no earthly idea what we're going to do for the next show. So tune in. It's going to be fun.
Exactly. I think what we're going to have to do is have a topic dartboard or something and just toss a dart randomly at
that
the
works.
Board and see what happens.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that works. All right.
I like those. You know, the randomness of tossing a dart.
Okay, talk to you all later, everyone.
Yep, see you all later.